afternoon. You are tuned to a Juno Afternoon for Thursday, March 19th, the year 2015. Jeff Brown with you filling in for Shona Osterhout today. We'll talk to poet Jeremy Pitecki about his new book, Overwinter. We'll talk with visiting yoga instructor Kim Grief about her weekend workshops. Catherine Kell will be at Highlight Movie Night at the Canvas. Performer Ricky and Dan will be here with a preview of this weekend's dance showcase. And Nancy McTurney will be here with Arts Up. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music and More today on the Juno Afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 35 degrees. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain. Saturday, it looks like rain is in the forecast with high temperatures around 43 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Senate is considering a bill that seeks to bring greater assistance to victims of human trafficking, but it's hit a roadblock. Matt Laszlo reports from Washington.
Nothing's easy in the U.S. Senate. A bill meant to help victims of sex trafficking in the United States has sunk into partisan gridlock over a provision barring federal dollars for abortions. Democrats say the language was snuck into the bill, but Republicans counter the legislation was there the whole time. Now Democrats are filibustering it. But if the bill dies, an amendment from Wyoming Republican Senator John Barrasso helping tribal communities gain access to money for anti-trafficking programs would die with it.
I think this is an important amendment and an important piece of legislation. I'm very disappointed that the Democrats are blocking it.
Both parties' leaders are drawing stark lines in the sand. So suddenly, an otherwise uncontroversial bill has been sucked into party politics. Senator John Tester, vice chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee, vowed to take a closer look at the federal response to human trafficking in tribal communities last summer. In a press release in August, the Montana Democrat said the sexual exploitation of Native American children is a growing crisis that needs to be addressed head-on. This week, he stopped just short of throwing up his hands, blaming Republicans for playing politics and regretting the disagreement over the bill.
Well, I think we've got an opportunity to do something really good here. Unfortunately, it got tied up with politics on another issue that has nothing to do with it, which seems like this is where we're at almost every week.
Even if this bill dies in the Senate, Chairman Barrasso says the push for action against human trafficking in Indian country would continue.
Well, as chairman of the Indian Affairs Committee, I'm going to continue to work to deal with this issue. If we can't get it on this piece of legislation, we'll bring it separately.
North Dakota Democrat Heidi Heidkamp agrees with Barrasso. She adds that even if the larger bill falls victim to the political realities of the contemporary Senate, there's still an opportunity to do some good for North Dakota.
Well, that doesn't mean that if we can't reach some kind of agreement on the rest of this, that we still shouldn't be considering these. I'm hopeful that we'll find a path forward.
If the 114th Congress can't reach an agreement and get anything done on the Justice for Victims of Sex Trafficking Act, maybe this group of senators on the Indian Affairs Committee can find a way to move their own similar legislation tailored just for Indian country. But as it goes, nothing is easy in the Senate. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Tribal college students from across the country took part in 3 days of academic and sports competitions this week at the American Indian Higher Education Consortium Conference held in New Mexico. Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute student Brandon Barney entered a drawing piece called Thoughts of a Woman in the art competition.
The whole drawing worked off her eyes. Her eyes gave off more of a thought aspect of the future or possibly what's going on in your mind. The main thing I focused on was the borderline because I worked off newspaper and cardboard.
Roderick Bruce from the Turtle Mountain Community College entered 3 pieces. Here he describes his mixed media man-like piece made with things like tinfoil and foam.
Mainly, what is our future? What is our decision, especially with the technology in its hand? Kind of that innovation and drive.
Bruce says he's transferring schools.
I'm an artist at heart, but I'm wondering if I want to be an engineer, a researcher, a scientist, a doctor, or an artist, or a lawyer. And going back to my piece kind of shows my inner thoughts of what's to do next, what to change the world, which is one of my ambitions.
Carrie Billy, president of the Tribal Consortium, says the event gives students a sense of community.
There are students all over the country trying to strengthen tribal sovereignty and self-determination through tribal higher education. But then it's also a chance for them to test their academic skills, knowledge of traditional issues, traditional knowledge, American Indian history.
Billy says the conference is in its 33rd year. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon. First guest is Jeremy Pataki, who's doing a workshop on poetry, a reader's approach to poetry tomorrow at the Jack. And tonight he's doing a reading with Emily Wall at Heritage Coffee downtown. Both start at 6 p.m. Jeremy, thank you for being in the station with me today.
Thank you.
So are you a poet or author?
Well, I primarily identify as a poet, and my first book, Over Winter, is a book of poetry. I do also write some prose. And have had some essays published and you know, a variety of other prose pieces published. So I am a poet and a writer, but I'll say poet.
And you're one of the founders of 49 Writers.
Correct. And we're just hitting our five-year anniversary.
For people who don't know, could you tell me about 49 Writers, please?
Sure. 49 Writers is a statewide literary organization founded to support the artistic development of writers throughout Alaska, while fostering a writing community and building an audience for literature. And it was something that really grew out of the efforts of Andromeda Romano-Lax and Deb Vanas, who started the 49 Writers blog, which gets, last count, I think it was something like 25,000 hits a month and is growing. And that daily collaborative blog grew into this much more robust organization that's thriving now.
You teach poetry?
On occasion, and I have.
What's the first thing you tell your students?
Well, I suppose it depends on if it's a writing workshop or a class like the one I'll be teaching here in Juneau, which is geared toward readers of poetry or would-be readers of poetry as well as writers. But I think one of the fundamental things right away is to give yourself permission to read for pleasure and maybe even to acknowledge when something might not be pleasurable and to really dive into, at least initially, the writing that that you find pleasing and live in that space for a bit and then go from there into examining how that pleasure or displeasure works and where it comes from and what its implications are and how it can be a tool for growing as a reader or writer.
Do you notice any difference between young poets and older poets?
You know, that's a good question. I think extremely young poets have a keen sense of sound and are fully equipped still to relish language from a perspective of pleasure. And I'm thinking, I mean, all the way down to truly little kids, you know, too early to read, who can sort of feel almost physically the music in language. And I think that capacity is something that the best readers, regardless of how old they are or how old they get, can maintain or sort of rediscover.
How do you know when a poem is done?
Well, I would say for me, it's part instinct. I really read and write out loud. I'm constantly sort of talking to myself as I'm writing and reading a poem in its many drafts aloud. And so there's a certain comfort that, you know, comes from the ear as well as sort of an intellectual and emotional contentedness that together sort of indicates that it's done. There's not not a real pat answer, but it is sort of instinct informed from those things.
You're doing a reading tonight at Heritage Coffee downtown in their new building.
Yes.
It must be an honor to move in there and be the first author to come and read.
I am very excited, and I had the chance to check the space out this morning, and it's a great space. If I was living in Juneau full-time, I have a feeling I would frequent that place. And it's a well-appointed spot, and I'm honored to be there, and I'm honored to be there with Emily Wall at 6.
Seems like poetry and coffee have a lot in common.
They do, certainly do for me.
What kind of tools do you help support artistic development with poets?
Well, I think bringing sort of a diversity of poetics to bear itself is sort of an important tool in the toolbox. Enthusiasm and pleasure are another. Of course, diction, just the incredible wealth that the English language is itself, I think, is vastly important and sometimes underrated, and so finding ways to open that up more fully.
You're doing a class tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Jack, a reader's guide to poetry.
Yes, actually the class is on Sunday.
Oh, Sunday, I'm sorry.
Sunday. Oh, I'm sorry, that's also wrong. Tuesday. A little scrambled. So Tuesday at 6 o'clock at the Jack on reading poetry.
What's the secret to enjoying poetry?
Well, I think one secret is that there is no secret. It's not something that comes with a code or sort of a puzzle that's there to be solved. There's something there for everything. And so I think, you know, just kind of staying with it long enough to find your place within it is maybe a good place to start. I mean, if you liken it to music, of course, no one person likes all music or is equipped to appreciate all music, probably not anyway, or at least we have genres of music or bands that we like more than others, composers that speak more fully to us, and I think it's the same with poetry, and so, you know, sort of getting over the sense that there are right answers and wrong answers, and you know, there are good poems and bad poems, and if you encounter a poem that isn't doing positive work on you or that you're not finding pleasurable, I think it can be unfortunate to blame yourself for that or even blame the poem for that. And so there's ways to go from that permission and dive in.
I'm talking with Jeremy Pataki. He's doing a workshop next Tuesday on A Reader's Approach to Poetry, and he's talking tonight at 6 p.m. at Heritage Coffee downtown. Jeremy, do me a favor and read some of your poem from your new book, please.
Okay. This poem is called Sky Behind Weather. Are you just weather and birds? Always the light forging colors from air, curtains of rain, and some measure of distance to peaks. We see our former selves poorer, with bright lichen eyes, and time for the weathered core of this old volcano, frost-wedged and slid down into a painting. A symmetry develops between the campfire and the aurora. They are responsive, attentive, and the water sings that out, the still lake sings that out. The sky behind weather is a forest's worth of berries illuminating unseeable attics in birds. Ourselves behind sleep almost know us, almost consider leaving a note on the table in the window.
Jeremy Pataki reading from his new book, Over Winter. What about winter inspires poetry to you, other than it's not much else to do?
Well, especially, you know, up in the subarctic, you know, with the incredibly long nights and incredibly short days and that quality of light that comes, you know, in the evening with extremely long, protracted, nearly impossible sunsets that are just totally stirring and then followed by that long darkness. It's definitely, for me, an introspective time that's pretty pretty custom made for the kind of contemplation that that for me helps with poetry.
My next question is just off the top of my head. Well, how do you get past the notion that poetry has to rhyme?
Did you say how do you get past that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think rhyme is one one tool that we have to deploy through language, and I think there are others. And so, you know, just kind of learning to enjoy and use, you know, alliteration and repetition and all of these other you know, options that we have at our disposal through language is you know, helpful. You know, rhyme is a really good entry point into so many other tricks just waiting to be used in words.
Cool. I've been talking with Jeremy Pataki. He's doing a reading tonight at 6 to 7 p.m. at Heritage Coffee downtown with Emily Wall. Next Tuesday at the Jack, he's going to be doing a reader's approach to poetry. And that would be good if you could pre-register ahead of time for that.
Yeah, we do encourage that or request that on the 49 Writers website, which is a quick Google away. And it's a pretty affordable. I think it's $35 for non-members of 49 Writers and $30 for members. It's a two-hour class. Should be a great time. And it's really been exciting watching the membership here in Southeast grow. We have a lot of new members throughout Southeast Alaska and also new board members that live in Juneau and Douglas. So I hope to see some familiar people and also meet some new people.
Jeremy Pataki, thank you for coming in. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. And I'll just say again that the book is called Over Winter, and it's published by the University of Alaska Press and the Alaska Literary Series, which is edited by Peggy Schumacher.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 19th of March, 2015. It's the birthday of Philip Roth, the novelist, Newark, New Jersey, 1933. Father was an insurance salesman, both his parents, children of Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe. He was an English major. He taught English, went off to teach at the University of Chicago, where he became friends with Saul Bellow, who told him that he should keep writing, that he had talent. And so, in 1959, when he was 26, he published his first book, a novella and short stories, Goodbye Columbus, won the National Book Award. Two more novels got mixed reviews, and then he didn't publish anything for 5 years, and then came Portnoy's Complaint in 1969, a monologue by Alexander Portnoy to his analyst, which got rave reviews, and its sexual content made it controversial and extremely popular. It was the best-selling book of 1969. He's continued a prolific novelist. His 31st book, Nemesis, came out in 2010. It's the birthday of Nikolai Gogol, the Russian writer, Ukraine, 1809. Best known for his satiric play, The Government Inspector, a big hit in 1836, and for his short stories, The Nose and The Overcoat. He became a follower of a Russian Orthodox priest who convinced him that art was sinful, and Gogol fasted, trying to overcome the urge to write, and destroyed his health and died at the age of 43. It's the birthday of Richard Francis Burton, Torquay, England, 1821, who translated the Arabian Nights for us and also the Kama Sutra. The first reported bank heist in America pulled off on this date in 1831, Wall Street, New York City. A man named Edward Smith walked away with $245,000 in banknotes. Bank robbery is now in decline. According to the FBI, the average bank robbery today yields about $7,500. And it's the birthday of the comedian Jackie Mabley, Moms Mabley, born in Brevard, North Carolina, 1894, who said, "A woman's a woman until the day she dies, but a man's only a man as long as he can." Here's a poem for today by Fleur Adcock, entitled Kissing. The young are walking on the riverbank, arms around each other's waists and shoulders, pretending to be looking at the water lilies and what might be a nest of some kind over there, which two who are clamped together, mouth to mouth, have forgotten about. The others, making courteous detours around them, talk, stop talking, kiss. They can see no one older than themselves. It's their river. They've got all day. Seeing's not everything. At this very moment, the middle-aged are kissing in the backs of taxis on the way to airports and stations. Their mouths and tongues are soft and powerful and as moist as ever. Their hands are not inside each other's clothes because of the driver, but locked so tightly together that it hurts. It may leave marks on their not, of course, youthful skin, which they won't notice. They, too, may have futures. Kissing, poem by Fleur Adcock, from Poems 1960 to 2000, published by Blood Axe Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
The Juno Unitarian Universalist Fellowship invites the community to join them on Sunday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. for the intergenerational Nowruz celebration of spring at the Temple Sukkot Shalom on Cordova Street in Douglas. Swing by on Sunday to salute spring in the style of Persian New Year. Say something that starts with S and symbolizes spring for you, then submit it to share. Seeds, socks, sunshine, spices, sequins, sculptures, and seashells are just a few suggestions to spark your senses.
It's 23 minutes past the hour. You are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is coming to us by the telephone. Kim Grief returns to Juno to share the ever-adapting Evolve Yoga Style. Kim, thank you for being on the air with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
First of all, a little bit of background for people who don't know Kim.
Yeah, a little bit about myself. I am a yoga teacher, a mother, a wife, a yoga studio owner here in Anchorage, Alaska. I have a ferocious love affair with anatomy. Some people collect action figures, some people collect china. I study anatomy, and that's kind of what I bring to the table in my yoga classes.
Can you tell me about the Evolve Yoga Style?
Yeah, the Evolve Yoga Style is really stemming from this ever-adapting style of many different styles. So I was trained in forest yoga. My background is in that. I've studied Ashtanga yoga, Vinyasa yoga, and Evolve really comes from just looking at what was happening with my own body, with my students' bodies, and realizing that sometimes these traditional styles kind of groove us into a way of being posturally, energetically, mentally. And so the Evolve style really takes the form of curiosity and helping students cultivate a really deep connection to their own bodies and what's happening for them. We look a lot at postural alignment and how to help students come into a better, more efficient postural alignment.
How does it differ from other styles of yoga? Is it more physical?
You know, it is more physical and it's not. Sometimes the work is really subtle. We'll be rolling around on the floor on tennis balls and it seems like we're not doing much. But then I get students up to doing something like sun salutations that's a little more vigorous and they can feel the difference of that more subtle work. So in some ways it's more subtle, and in other ways it's more vigorous.
I mean,
kind of like...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, it's kind of like all yoga. It's kind of this union of opposites.
I'm intrigued by this rolling on tennis balls. Can you describe that a little bit more, please?
Yeah. So, for example, a lot of us know this posture of being on the computer too long or sitting behind the wheel for too long, where our shoulders are anterior rotated and our head is kind of carried forward. So a lot of times I'll have students take a tennis ball on a yoga block and put that on the wall, and right underneath your clavicle, your collarbone, is this little muscle called subclavus. And I'll have students roll that tennis ball across that muscle. It's amazing how the shoulder, that posture, starts to move back a little bit from rolling on a tennis ball.
I'm just imagining somebody in the listening audience rolling their back against the wall with a tennis ball, listening to the radio.
I'm sure everybody's like taking that tennis ball out of their dog's mouth and going and trying it right now.
Have you ever done yoga on the radio?
I have not.
Maybe it's something we can explore someday.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about your workshops this weekend, please.
Yeah, this weekend I'm kicking off Friday with a 5:30 to 7:30. It's called Better Breath of Respiration, and that's at the Rainforest Yoga. Here we explore taking a deeper breath. It's a great introduction to breathing. It's good for both yoga teachers and yoga students wanting to know why we do what we do, the benefits of it, the anatomy of it, all that good stuff. And then we roll right into a full weekend. Saturday from 10 to 1, I've got a workshop on unshielding the heart. That's going to be a little more vigorous, both that Saturday morning and Sunday morning from 10 to 1. In the afternoons on Saturdays and Sundays, I've got a little more applied anatomy. I call it anatomy for the asana junkie. So those of us that love yoga and we want to explore more of the anatomy of it and spark some deeper connections, those afternoon sessions are going to be really good for both teachers and for students wanting to explore more. So those afternoon sessions on Saturday and Sunday, those are from 3 to 5 p.m.
Tell me a little bit more.
Oh, and on Sunday, 2 to 4.
Thanks. Could you tell me a little bit more about developing precise muscle balance?
Yeah, well, it kind of goes back to that image of overworked computer posture. Right? So if you see a hunchback and the shoulders are rounding forward, that's telling us that there is a muscle imbalance between the front and the back side of the body. The front side is super tight, probably locked and short in the muscles, and pulling the bony structure forward. The back side of the body, the imbalance there, is that the back is overstretched and the muscles are kind of in this locked and long position. If you've ever experienced a deep burning sensation between your shoulder blades and you're rounding forward to try to get, you know, the kinks worked out, you're actually making it worse. What helps to alleviate that pain in the upper back from overstretched or locked in long muscles is to strengthen them. So I teach students how to strengthen the muscles of their upper back while they're opening the muscles of the front side of their body.
Thanks, Kim. I've been talking with Kim Grief about the Evolve Yoga Style. She'll be doing a series of workshops this weekend at the Rainforest Yoga, starting with Friday at 5:30. If you need more information about that, you can call the people from Rainforest Yoga and find out more. Kim, thanks very much for being on the show with me today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just thanks for having me, Jeff. And again, the cost of the entire workshop and all of that can be found on the rainforestyoga.org website.
Thank you.
30 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Catherine Kell from Canvas. She's here to talk about the Canvas movie night coming up this Friday. Catherine, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So we're going to go back in time a little bit for people who haven't figured out what Canvas is yet.
Okay. So the Canvas is part of Reach, Inc., which is a local nonprofit that serves members of the community who experience developmental disabilities. They have a wide range of services ranging from infant learning programs all the way up through supported employment and assisted living. And the Canvas is an art outreach part of that program. Our goal is to create a space where all members of the community feel welcome to come and create art, creating the opportunity for integration through shared arts experiences. So during the day, we specifically have classes for adults who experience developmental disabilities. Excuse me. And then in the evening, we have community classes, which anyone can attend, and we hold a lot of events, such as this movie night. Once again, just trying to create a space that anyone feels welcome in.
All right. And you've got a movie night coming up this Friday.
We do. So this Friday, March 20th, I believe, at 6 p.m., we're going to be showing Jurassic Park. It's going to be from 6 to 9 p.m. We're going to be basically putting the movie up on a large screen, and there will be free treats from Pie in the Sky.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah. It should be a good way for people to kind of cap off their spring break week. It's a family-friendly movie, and the event is completely free.
And what time does it start? Does it start?
It starts at 6 p.m.
What kind of classes have we got going on in the near future?
Well, we got a couple classes coming up. We actually have one that starts this evening. It's called Watercolor Still Life. It's being taught by one of our guest artists, Tim Ortiz. It's going to be running March 19th up through April 9th, 6:30 to 9 p.m. And basically, this class is giving people the opportunity to learn how to work with watercolors through a series of still life projects. So they're going to be learning, you know, basically the process in painting from life, in-depth exploration of watercolor paints, papers, and techniques. It's a great class for beginners, and all materials are included in the price of the class, which is $185.
All right. Catherine Kell from the Canvas, anything you'd like to add that I forgot to ask?
Nope, I think that's it.
This is Bird Note. Back in 1890, a man named Eugene Shifflin had a dream. A resident of New York City, he wanted to be able to hear all the birds mentioned in Shakespeare's plays.
The king forbade my tongue to speak of Mortimer, but I will find him.
So, he brought about 100 starlings from Europe and released them into Central Park.
Nay, I'll have a starling taught to speak nothing but Mortimer, and give it to him to keep his anger still in motion.
Today, those first 100 starlings have multiplied into more than 200 million birds. From coast to coast, from northern Canada to deep into Mexico, you'll find them. Yet not one of these iridescent black, yellow-billed birds is native to the Americas. It was the starling's ability to mimic human speech that prompted Shakespeare to mention it in his play Henry IV. And although Eugene Shifflin probably dreamt of this serenade, that dream has multiplied to this. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from the Alaskan Brewing Company. Now hiring for seasonal retail associates in Juneau. More application information at alaskanbeer.com.
35 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into a Juneau Afternoon. Our next guests are Richie Dan and Robert Newman, here to talk about a dance showcase which is happening.
Yes. We're doing Moving On at the Jack on March 21st at 7, and then March 22nd at 2 p.m. And the tickets are $15 and $10 for youth and 15 for adults.
I started off this morning by listening to Morning Edition.
Yes.
And I heard this fantastic story about your background.
Thank you.
Startling and very dramatic. But,
I know.
But we're glad you're here in Juneau.
I'm glad to be here. It's an awakening for me.
Is this going to be a farewell performance?
Yes, this is going to be a farewell. I don't want to call it a farewell because I've been my students are inside me, and I'm a part of them. They're a part of me. How could you say goodbye to some things that's a part of you? So I don't look at it that way. This particular celebration is because I'm very proud of all my students. That's already the cast of Chicago, too. I think they're my students, too. So young and old, I just want to have a party, and I want them to remember me that way.
What drew you into the world of dance?
Pardon?
What drew you into the world of dance?
What got me into the world of dance? Well, my mother was already an artist and a political activist. And I've always loved her on stage. But dance was more of my way of expression. And eventually I became an actor after that. But it was my mother who gave me that influence. And then when I went to New York, I saw Broadway. And it's basically, I went to this particular company, and it had a scientific way of teaching children. And I found it fascinating. And I like the fact that it goes to the next generation. All these different reconstructed ballets was given to the children, and they reconstructed it. And the ballets like masters are like Agnes DeMille or Jerome Robbins. We learned that, and it trickled down to the next of kin so that it doesn't die. So I was very fascinated about this particular company. So I finally said, I think this is a gold mine. I'm going to do this when I grow up. So now I have it.
Have you grown up yet?
Not yet. Still young.
Is there a particular style of dance that you gravitate towards?
Well, for me, dance is an expression. So when I see Agnes DeMille do modern dance or Jose Limon, or when I see Jack Cole doing modern dance, I get really interested and fascinated with it. But when I see ballet like Jerome Robbins, that's another story. That's another story because these geniuses, I'm more into looking at the choreographer and how they look at a piece of art or a piece of music and try to tell a story in the play. That's why I'm more of a choreographer and I really am into storytelling, and Broadway has given me that avenue.
When did you get into Juneau?
I got into Juneau 2011.
And you've been teaching at the Juneau Dance Theater for all that time, pretty much.
Yes, I have. But then I started trickling to other communities because I found that to make myself tick, I can't stay in one place. I have to go to Perseverance. I have to go to the high schools. I have to be in the Filipino community. I have to go to Latitude 858. I just went all over the place because I wanted to really reach the children as much as I can so that this art that I have doesn't die.
I have these wonderful memories of watching you and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Thank you. Yes, I know. Thank you.
Robert Newman.
Hello.
You're going to be taking part in the performance?
Yeah, I'm one of Richie's dancers. Actually, you should say performers, because we have to sing, we have to act, we have to dance, we have to do all three. Richie works us really hard. It's a boot camp, and it's really fun, and it's really awesome to be working on this now as I'm going off to college and deciding what I want to do with my life, and Richie's definitely helped me find that.
What kind of things do you remember learning from Richie?
Oh, so many things. So many dance steps, she's got these moves that are like tongue twisters that are meant to mess you up. I've got all these different movements that I have memorized. I have acting tips Most of all, I have memories. I mean, it's just a really fun class, and it's really fun to learn Ricci's style of teaching. And it's nice to be around all these awesome performers in this great class.
Ricci, what kind of things do you learn from your students?
I learn to be more of a better human being because they teach me to be humble. They tell me, they pick me, and they teach me how to listen and to see what they need. And because I am 55, I have been in the business for 40 years. I know a lot of ways, but I see and I also feel the hunger in them. And once I see that, I start giving them what they need. Every single kid has a unique way of expression and a unique way to a problem, and I have to listen to each and every one of them. And they are my teachers, and they don't even know it. They are.
What's the first thing you tell your students when at the beginning of a class?
Be humble. The theater is a very small world, and just listen. And be open, be versatile, and don't give an attitude.
And stretch.
Stretch a lot.
You want to elaborate on that a little bit, Robert?
Yeah, we just lots of stretching. It will help class not hurt so much. But it's yeah.
Especially with actors, you really need to give. I mean, Robert is an actor, so I had to stretch him in different other ways that he never seen before. So with dancers, that's usually the mantra. But with actors, you've got to be on top of them all the time because it's not their usual to do a plié or do a bar stretch. So you kind of have to be on top of them.
I want to mention again this story about Lisa Fu that was in today's morning edition. It will be on, part two will be on tomorrow morning's morning edition.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, check out the KTOR website and listen to this.
Oh, I will. I'm recording every single bit right now because I'm probably going to do a book about it, too. And Juno's a big part of that book.
Tell me about the performance this weekend.
This weekend, we have two performances, one on Saturday, March 21st at 7 p.m. and March 22nd at 2 o'clock p.m.
Who else taking part in it?
Everybody, that's anybody. Oh my God, every single talent in this place. We have Shona singing, serenading me, Salissa Thal, Allison is in it too. Everybody in the cast of Chicago's in it, and also my dancers. And, that's about it. About 25 of us.
Some musicians.
And beautiful musicians. Yeah. Bob Cohen, and we have a wonderful bass player, because I'm going to have a band behind me, yeah.
You're going back to New York City?
Yes, I am leaving this summer around after the recitals and all.
What kind of things emotionally are you taking back to New York with you?
See, I call Juno a Shangri-La, so that I will always be close to, because what I don't have in New York is a place that I can just walk with my dogs and just think without drama. Here is a place that I can breathe, and I always have to think about that when I'm in New York because it's so cutthroat. But Juno will give me that place that I can go back to and maybe breathe a little bit deeper when I think of it.
Ricci Dunn and Robert Newman, thank you very much for being on the show today. Anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
Come see the show.
Come see our show.
And boogie with us.
7 o'clock on Saturday, 2 o'clock on Sunday.
Yeah.
And where's that going to be?
And it's at the Jack.
At the Jack. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 46 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned in to a Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Nancy DeCherney, here to talk about things going on in the community, artistic-wise, and more.
And more.
More.
In Juno, we have more. We have tonight, in fact, from 6 to 7 p.m. at the New Heritage. I think it's the New Heritage place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Better go there just to see that. But Jeremy Pataki is launching his new book, which I think would be quite interesting. And he'll be doing some other stuff during the week, too. Let's see. There is Watercolors Still Life with Tim Ortiz at the Canvas. And this is a weekend of theater. You have The Life of Henry V, which is Theater in the Rough at McPheeters Hall. And The Odd Couple, which is Perseverance Theater over in Douglas. Don't miss either one of these. They're fabulous. I had a great time at The Odd Couple. It's outright prolonged laughter, which all of us need some of. I think, let's see, the Sunday performance of the King Henry is a matinee, as is The Odd Couple. Okay, so let's just get through Friday. We have a spring break campus going on over at the Perseverance Theater. At 5 p.m., there's a hospice beer and wine tasting fundraiser over at the Jack to raise money for hospice and home care. You can get tickets. They don't have them online. They did the old school way of having paper tickets. Remember those?
I think so. Yeah.
Painfully, we remember them. But you can go to, I believe they've got paper tickets. I know we have them at the Jack, and they have them probably at Hearthside Books in both locations. Or just show up. I'm sure that you'll be able to get at the door, and they have a nice selection of wine. They're starting to come through the door and getting stocked up and in the fridge. So there is an Evolve Yoga Workshop at Rainforest Yoga. The Canvas Movie Night is Jurassic Park. We've got Dan Hobson on classical guitar at 7 o'clock up at the Gold Room. It's kind of a quiet Friday, according to this schedule. I suspect it isn't really.
I thought it was Jurassic Park.
It could be Jurassic Park. I don't know. Now, when is Goldtown doing their almost quiet, not quite quiet, Peter Pan? I was reading about that, but I don't see it on my schedule here. Oh, well. AWARE is having domestic violence and sexual assault advocacy training at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning at the AWARE shelter. If you're interested in that, give them a call. There is a Raptor Center annual meeting at the Nugget Mall, so I bet you get to see some birds.
That's right. They'll maybe have seven of their showcase birds.
All right. And they're fun to watch. Let's see. There's Rainforest Body Vox. Wait a minute. I know about that. Body Vox is a dance troupe from Portland, Oregon that we've been trying to get here for many, many years. They're touring the state finally, and so we have been able to bring them too. They combine dance and film sort of along the line when you saw the Intergalactic Nemesis. There was film and there was people. This is very similar to that. So, and they're very sort of athletic and just remarkable dance troupe. I know that we seem to be in competition with Ricci's dance thing, which you were just talking about. That was an unfortunate collision of dance movements. I don't know. But we are offering, if you want to go see Ricci's thing, pick the Sunday show, and we'll give you $2 off on your Body Vox thing. So come on Saturday to see Body Vox. It's going to be amazing. And like I said, we've been trying for years to get them here. So finally we do. There is, of course, Ricci's thing on Saturday and on Sunday afternoon, the Moving On.
I want to talk a little bit about Body Vox one more time.
Okay.
I had a chance to look at him online.
Yeah.
And his costumes, movements,
it's
sound
amazing.
Effects.
The whole film thing, I think, is really quite interesting. You can see that on, we've linked some video to some of the our online stuff with them, so you can sort of get an idea about how they're doing it, going to do that. I haven't seen them do it on stage, so I'm looking forward to that sort of thing. And some of them have arrived today, so such a gorgeous day for them to be here. I hope they're enjoying it. There's a March barn dance at the St. Anne's Parish Hall. It's just a big dance weekend. That's just all there. You can dance, you can watch dance, whatever. The barn dance is at 7:30 up at St. Anne's Parish Hall on Saturday. And then, of course, we have the theater things. I always remind people, you think you've got many weekends to see these theater things, and you put them off, and then the next thing you know, it's next month.
It's a sunny day. You say, I'm not going inside.
Yeah. Don't go there. I mean, go ahead and go to these things because they're phenomenal. Let's see. There's an international folk dance at the Alaska Club downtown on Sunday, too. So you can just dance all the way through. On Monday, the third candidate for the Juno Symphony conductor role will be here, and he has a roundtable or an opportunity to meet him on Monday from 11:30 to 1 at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council's gallery. So this, if you're interested in the symphony, it's a good time to get to know the person a little bit more one-on-one than just from the stage. So take that opportunity, bring your own lunch and come on down, get to know that. Let's see, we have, there's a free course for prospective homebuyers. That's out at Riverbend Apartments on Postal Way. It's at 6 p.m. You can go on to our website, which is jahc.org, and look at the calendar and get all the details with phone numbers and things like that. And ktoo.org has the same calendar, so isn't that handy? Tlingit Language Learners on Monday from 6 to 7. Let's see. Jeff Chang is going to be out at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall from 7:30 till 9 on Monday. Talking. He's a hip-hop artist, as I understand it. Should be great.
He's an author.
And
he's written two or three books about hip-hop.
Yeah, so a great opportunity that the university is offering us there. And those are free, of course. Let's see. What do we got here? Tuesday. A Reader's Approach to Poetry with Jeremy Pataki. That's going to be from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Jack on Tuesday night. So another opportunity to meet with a poet.
There's a charge for that, and you should pre-register by calling somebody.
Calling somebody. And like I said,
but don't call me.
All right, I won't put your phone number out here. On Wednesday, we've got, let's see, a beginning and intermediate Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. You didn't know that was an art event, but it really is. So that's from 5 to 7 on Wednesday at the Learning Connection downtown. There's a landscape painting, acrylics with Mitch Watley at the Canvas from 6:30 to 9. And at the Murray Drake Planetarium, they're having the Art of the Aurora from 6:30 to 7:30. I always encourage people to take in the Murray Drake Planetarium if you've never been. It's a, sort of a little treasure that we have here, and I'm really glad people have started to make things happen there. And on Wednesday, they have a special showing at 7:30 of The Odd Couple. So lots of things to do this week, and it's spring, so it's time to go outside anyway.
Clink.
Clink. Clink is coming up on April Fool's Day. We have over 30 wines coming. It's a fundraiser for the Juno Arts and Culture Center. You have an opportunity to meet the winery people themselves are coming with their wines, the distributors. It's a special thing that Specialty Imports does. They do a sort of a trade show, and they bring the people who represent the wines to town. Three of them are coming to the Arts Council this year. And it's a great opportunity to try a whole selection of wines that maybe you're just curious about, you know, that way you don't have to buy an entire bottle. We have music with Tom Loker and Wayne Norlin, and I think Clay Good is going to join them, and I believe the refreshments are going to be by the Panhandle Produce, Provisions. Anyway, it's a really lovely April Fool's Day to have just a glass of wine and visit with your friends and support the Jack. So I encourage you to come out for that. April's going to be a jam-packed month. We don't want to get into it. You'll get tired just listening to me.
I should mention, if you're doing an event,
get on this calendar.
That's right. Get on the calendar as soon as you're packing in.
Yeah, and do that by calling the Jack or sending us an email.
Nancy Duterney, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Tuned into a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, we'll talk with author Jeff Chang about his talk on Monday night at the University of Alaska Southeast. We'll talk with author and walker Mary Lou King about her book, 90 Short Walks Around Juno. Bob Armstrong will be here with a preview of his Friday Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And we'll talk with members of Body Box about their Saturday performance at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council in the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. Cloudy skies expected for tonight and on Friday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain, high temperatures around 43 degrees.